This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
your award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Right now is one of the most important times in the 26-year history of Joy. Times are tough financially, but that will never stop us from delivering powerful, meaningful, and uplifting radio for you. To get ready for the future, we're launching Joy Nation, and we need your support to do it. So help Joy by asking your workmates, your next-door neighbour, your mum, your dad, your siblings, and of course your friends. Go to joy.org.au and make a donation to build Joy Nation. Joy. Your voice, your radio station.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture. Saturday Magazine. Every Saturday, 10 till 12 on Joy 94.9.
Saturday Magazine, Macca and Tass, independent media is so important. We run our radiothon campaign on independent media, and someone else who believes and works and is committed to independent media is Misha Ketchell from The Conversation. Independent media makes a difference. Misha, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you? Are you in a closet?
No, I came out years ago. No, I'm in a...
Misha, we're sitting in separate rooms. There's a hole in the wall between Macca and I and Paul, and it is really awkward, but I have to say, from my personal point of view, it is just so nice to be out of the house for a change.
Oh, that's great. So you're actually in the studio.
Yeah. The first couple of weeks, I wasn't. I was doing it from home, but I actually didn't enjoy that, and I don't think the quality of the sound's as good. And it's now been made possible for us to safely do this in the studio. But we're not having guests, so it may be a while before we see you in here again, Misha.
Okay. Well, that's all right. But I'm very keen to get back into it. I want to get out of the house.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. This is sort of my weekly sort of, you know, outing. It's wonderful. Now, we've got heaps we want to talk about with you, Misha. We've got a range of topics, but it would be remiss of us not to actually ask you to maybe give us some reflections to begin with on the impact of coronavirus on some of the work that you're doing, and what do you see as being some of the key issues that have emerged as a result of coronavirus epidemic?
Well, I think one of the key things that sort of underlies everything at the moment is the way in which the policy response from the federal government has affected areas like independent media, like arts and culture, and like university. Because if you look at the policy responses, I mean, you know, JobKeeper and JobSeeker and all those things, they've been very good in many ways. But the industries that really have been not supported have been universities. Mm. They're going to lose about $2.5 billion. They're thinking they might lose about 38% of their research jobs. And this is at a time when they are
38%.
Of a research role. That was that Deborah Cherry, who runs Universities Australia, was talking about that. And the reason is because the money from international students actually cross subsidises a lot of the research. Mm. Because when universities get funded to do research by the big funding bodies, they also have to bring their own money to the table, and they bring their money to the table from basically the money that they get from international students. And it's interesting because the government changed the rules on them 3 times, basically, which effectively ensure that they don't get any government support, even though they're not-for-profit organisations. And that's going to have a big effect, for example, on The Conversation, what we do, because we get a lot of our funding from the university sector. So we're sort of currently, every year we have, much like Joy, an annual donation drive where we ask our readers and audiences to contribute to our work. Mm-hmm. We're doing that again this year. We just launched our campaign this week, and I'd encourage anybody who's considering supporting independent media to please also consider The Conversation, when they're doing that. But we can see real problems sort of coming down the line because of this huge sort of funding impact on universities. And it's very similar, interestingly, in the way in which there's been a real failure to support arts organisations and their sort of role in our society. And it does seem to me, you know, just to be a conspiracy theorist for a moment, that there does seem to be almost a sort of a bias against independent sources of authority and knowledge. So you've got cuts to funding for the ABC, you've got cuts to funding for, you know, universities, which have been going on for years, which led them to take on international students in the first place, and now they're just being left sort of hanging in the wind. And you've really got, you've got sort of a whole sort of government response that really seems to be leaving arts, culture, media, academics out of the picture.
I think one of the challenge. Look, I'm not going to disagree with you, Michelle.
That's a very interesting analysis.
You know, I think, you know, there is, at lots of level of government, a lack of respect and a lack of support for independent media. It can't have escaped the government how important the university sector is. And I'd encourage them to even just think for a moment. The whole world is working on a COVID-19 vaccine. There are many, many other things that universities do and research that they do and findings, you know, and research that they do that delivers real results to people and to communities and to business. And think about the impact that's going to have as, you know, we come out of COVID-19, that the ability of those universities to do that research, to do that groundbreaking research across so many areas is going to be limited.
That's right, and it's sort of ironic because it's the time when we need them most. And also, it's a time when, you know, the latest surveys by ANU have said that trust in government has increased, trust in public service has increased. The reason for that is partly because people can see the government relying on experts, talking to experts, taking experts seriously, and experts now have a hugely important role to play in leading us out of this crisis and helping us recover and hopefully, you know, redesign societies in some ways to, you know, make things even better. And yet at that very time, the sector sort of has been abandoned. And it seems it's sort of been abandoned based on something that seems like an ideological antipathy, a real sense of, you know, we don't like these sort of independent institutions that are, you know, at risk of being a sort of separate source of power that will say things that are sometimes inconvenient for us.
I mean, look, media organisations around the world are doing it tough. I'm going to actually ask Brendan Noddle from the Salvos. I see that Rupert Murdoch has cut his bonus. I'm going to ask whether the Salvos can send old Rupert a food parcel.
Yeah. Don't think he needs it yet, Mac.
Something that's easy to eat, though, because I think he's, you know.
Mishra, I asked Macca this earlier on, and I'm going to ask you as well, while we're speaking about the impact of COVID-19 on our community, what is the one thing that you would like to see change as a result of this when we come out of this pandemic?
Oh, God, that's a terrific question. I would like to see the culture of we're all in this together that really has been evident through this process to continue, and also the culture of we're going to listen to experts, we're going to listen to the epidemiologists and the scientists and the people who actually know what they're talking about. I think there's been some great things in terms of the way a secular political society should be organised to serve members of the community, and there's been a really strong reinforcing of a sense of the community. And I would hate it if we sort of, once this crisis was over, moved back to sort of a more, you know, brutal every person for themselves sort of attitude again.
A culture of evidence-based policy and a culture of collaboration.
Oh,
that's really lovely.
Tash, you're dreaming.
Perhaps, but it's always good to have positive thoughts. Just moving along, and I've got to touch on this topic. You know, vaccinations come up in the media and has been hotly debated. You know, this is one of those issues that periodically comes up. All of a sudden, some of our sporting heroes, the NRL, have decided that they know better.
Well, not our sporting heroes.
No, not ours. But where are they from, Mac? Are they? I don't even follow.
Oh, look, you know, from rugby, and you know, look, if someone doesn't want to have a vaccination, at the end of the day, if they're making an informed judgment, and I use that term advisedly, that's their business, right? But when these sporting organisations want to be getting some special treatment to come out of isolation and to play, if the rule is you must have the flu vaccination, and they say, oh, no, look, I can't have that, I've got a religious objection to that, that's fine. Stay home.
What do you think, Misha?
Look, I probably, on balance, would agree with Macca, but the only thing about that is I'd say that is that you could potentially make sort of martyrs of people and make something more of a cause for them than it needs to be. The reality is we all need to have vaccines for herd immunity, for the whole community. It's a mutual responsibility thing. There's a lot of misinformation out there. And, you know, unfortunately it's been circulated. So a lot of people have, I think, mistaken beliefs about vaccines. And I think generally speaking, you know, the idea is if you're going to enter into a social context, whether it's a social contract, like being allowed to play sport, sometimes you have to accept the rules of that sport. The only thing I would say is that if you were really hardline about that, you do run the risk of those players that are being shut out becoming sort of a, you know, a cause celeb and giving more oxygen to the anti-vax than they deserve. So I'd be a little, I'd probably be slightly less hardline than.
The Victorian government has said that anybody who wants to work in a public hospital in frontline work must be 100% vaccinated against the flu.
I think it's perfectly reasonable. I mean, that's just a public health. That's, I mean, basically discharging an obligation to the public.
And how is playing football dissimilar?
Well, I mean, in some ways, I don't think it is, because you've got a situation where, what is it, how many players are going to be sort of in that bubble or in that sort of quarantine? You know, and every player that wants to be part of that has a mutual obligation to other players to not place them at risk. So, you know, on those criteria, I think, you know, I mean, you'd be quite within your rights to say either you get the vaccine or you don't play. I think that's true. I just think it's just, there's just some questions around the ways in which you sort of go about it so that you don't create a situation where you're sort of seen to be sort of aggressively hostile to those people.
And look, I understand that. I mean, the thing is that these sporting organisations did a deal, reached some conditions with the government, you know, for them to go into these training hubs or clusters, right? Now, if members of that sporting code don't want to abide by those rules and get the special treatment, okay, that's their right. But guess what? You don't play. And just the same as the Adelaide Crows had very clear instructions about how they are allowed to train and how many, and it was in two people at a time, or two people together, right? Well, apparently 8 or 10 were together. Now, you know, the CEO of the Adelaide Crows has apologised, but the reality is the AFL, for example, they won't categorise it as this. They want special treatment. They want exemptions to be made, and the government has said, well, if you do this, this, this and this, we'll actually consider it and we'll probably do it. So at the very first, you know, first bounce of the ball, guess what? They failed. You know, rugby. No, I can't have that. I have an objection, you know, to that. Okay, that's fine. You don't play. It's really simple. It's not about demonising people. You don't play.
Yeah, I think that's especially true because of the high visibility too. I mean, obviously, you can't have one rule for one group in society and another for another. I mean, it was interesting that those Adelaide players were in a golf course in the Barossa Valley. Yes. I mean, I don't think that helps either. You know, in terms of the optics of it, it's like, okay, you know, play by the rules.
Well, you can't vaccinate against stupidity, apparently.
No.
You are listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9 with Macca and Tass, chatting with Misha Ketchell, the editor of The Conversation, who are in the middle of their own radiothon, or not radiothon, but their own fundraising campaign.
A conversation-a-thon.
One of our listeners, Mark, says that we should call it a convo-thon.
A convo-thon.
There you go, Misha. Oh.
A
convo-thon.
A convo-thon.
I like that.
Do you reckon you get any... probably not after today. You won't get any rugby or AFL people supporting Michelle. Just blame me.
Really?
Just blame me.
I don't know. I reckon they, you know, it's interesting. I reckon there'd be a lot of people within rugby and the AFL who would totally agree with everything we just said then. Yeah. I mean, I was wondering, you know, those rugby players who having to play with those people who aren't getting their jabs, I wonder how they feel about it. I wouldn't be too happy.
Yeah, look, you know, everyone's entitled to their beliefs, no matter how stupid they are.
Misha, talk to us about the Pell case.
Well, the interesting thing was, because of the criminal trials and because of Pell's sort of appeal process, there were large parts of the Royal Commission into institutional responses to child sex abuse that were redacted, and they really related to George Pell's responsibility to act about paedophile priests, really in his time in Ballarat and then in Melbourne. And the key thing that came out when these redacted sections of the Royal Commission's findings were released was that the Royal Commission just didn't believe Pell. Pell said that he, you know, didn't know and wasn't aware, and the Royal Commission actually found that he actively took steps to take actions to reduce gossip around these matters, and that he, you know, clearly did know and was, you know, negligent in failing to act. And that's huge because it is going to open really the path for more sort of, you know, compensation claims, more criticism. And it really is in some ways the issue that when the criminal trials were proceeding, everybody was sort of saying, you know, that partly, or, you know, Pell, some of Pell's defenders were saying partly Pell is being tried for these sexual abuse allegations, but actually behind it is a sense of anger over his conduct leading the church and his failure to protect children against child sexual abuse. And to really have this very strong findings from the Royal Commission saying basically, now, we don't believe you. You clearly failed. You clearly knew what was going on. You know, I think it's hugely significant.
And it's important for people to understand, Misha, these are findings of a Royal Commission that went on for a couple of years, Tass.
Mm.
They're findings. They're not views. They're not opinions. They're based on the evidence they received and their assessment of that over a very long period of time. And, you know, does that sit at odds with what happened in the criminal trial? Yes, it does. But, you know, justice is never equal and even. But the Royal Commission findings, people need to read them and understand them and what they said.
Yeah, and they're very strong. I mean, they were very strong about basically not accepting his evidence that he didn't know and pointing to things that indicate that he would have known. And I think that's, you know, that certainly goes to his credibility, you know, in terms of his management of this whole matter. So quite significant news, I think, and hopefully it will again, you know, help the process of, you know, victims getting compensation and being able to move on.
I think the, you know, there's going to be some, you know, there'll be other media comment. I haven't actually seen anything from Andrew Bolt, but then again, I don't watch Sky. Only about 60,000 people do watch him, but I haven't watched it and I haven't seen a comment. I'm sure, you know, there'll be some other commentators that say it. You know, it's obviously part of a carefully conceived and long-standing plot between the Royal Commission, the ABC, and probably you, Misha. You're probably in on it. The findings, you know, stand on their own. They stand on their own.
I think they do. And they're, you know, they're very strong. So I would encourage anybody that's interested in this to actually go and read them. They're very strong and very clear.
Now, speaking about strange things that go on and strange events, I see that Pete Evans seems to have lost some of his work on Channel 7. He obviously hasn't found the cure for COVID-19 yet. You know, Paleo Pete seems... Perhaps he can get... Do you reckon he can get Job Seeker? Job Keeper?
I don't know. The thing about that really is a little bit depressing is that the Paleo Pete stuff isn't what ended his role.
No.
The rate.
No, it was the fact, you know, that Channel 7, you know, is losing money.
Yeah, as long as people were tuning in, Channel 10, Channel 7 didn't mind him peddling anything he wanted to peddle. You know, any misinformation was okay. The real thing was it stopped making money, and that was that.
Yeah, and, you know, I actually had an old fluorescent lamp in the garage, and I thought if I put some coloured cellophane over it, I could probably advertise it as a COVID, you know, just need it to strobe a bit and perhaps, you know, attach a thermos to it and, you know, make it into a massage. I could probably get $100,000 for it, Tess, don't you reckon?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What do you reckon?
Yeah.
So the question is, though, Macca, how are you and Tess going in the ratings? Because if you're going in well in the ratings, fine. But if you're not, could be a risk for you.
We might get knocked off.
It could be. Look, it could be a risk. But
I what are our measures of success these days, Macca? It used to be downloads. What is it now?
Well, actually, and I want to acknowledge that Neon Knights has been doing some fantastic shows music-wise and are leading the podcast downloads for the last little while. Good on them.
Are they, Macca?
Yes, absolutely. People, but one trend we've noticed...
They've been taken over.
That's all right. One thing that we've noticed is that the number of messages we're getting and the SMSs we're getting and across all the shows is that people are actually... Podcasts are slightly up, and I think they're coming from a whole range of different areas, but people are listening in. So what is our measure of success? Our measure of success, I think, is podcasts. It's feedback, but it's also how much money people donated to support Radiothon. We raised nearly $260,000, Misha.
Oh, great. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's very good.
But when you say we, is that your program within
No, Joy.
And,
But that's amazing. I mean, that's huge community support.
And in times like we're in at the moment. So what is the measure of success? I think one of the measures of success is our ability to, you know, for people to come on the show and talk to us and talk on other shows on Joy. We've seen over the last few years a big increase in availability, haven't we, Tass?
Yes, we have. But Macca, I've just seen a very funny comment. One of our listeners, let's call them 807, says that shouldn't the JobKeeper payment be called the VoteKeeper payment?
Oh, yes. VoteKeeper. Now, that's a good idea.
You'll need to keep it going for a bit longer than just 6 months.
I actually wanted to remake Joy into a sports organisation. So we could get...
A sports organisation?
Yeah, sports organisation. You know, when those sports grants were being given out, I reckon we could have got it. We could have got $500,000 for nothing.
I thought you wanted to make it a religious organisation, Macca, and therefore not pay tax.
No, we already don't pay tax. We're already a charitable organisation. No, we couldn't be religious. It's too broad a church.
Anyway, we're getting silly. Back to Misha.
It would need an exorcist.
Back to Misha. So, Misha, the Pete Evans story, where do you think that's going to land?
Well, I mean, I think it's landed. He's lost his job and, you know, he'll probably go and find a job somewhere else and they'll do probably what MasterChef did, which is get some new judges and reimagine the show. It's all about ratings. It's not about anything else. It had nothing to do with the misinformation that he was spreading in his, you know, spare time or his crazy schemes.
Mm.
It's very brutal.
Don't think it's giving oxygen to, like, you know, the sort of anti-scientific evidence-based sort of sectors, like the anti-vaxxers?
Well, I think Pete Evans certainly did, you know, through a long time of his high public profile. I wonder whether that will wane somewhat now. I mean, it's hard to know. But I just don't think he's, you know, losing his role is related to that. It's related to ratings.
Yeah, ratings, of course.
Now, we actually had a question, Misha. Do you have, look, you know, different state premiers have instituted different measures in lockdown and stuff, and Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews has been getting a lot of flack. In particular, the member for Q, Tim Smith, I think Tim needs to take a chill pill. He's getting a bit agitated, but a lot of federal MPs and state MPs on the Liberal side are getting very agitated about this. This sort of, it concerns me because what the Premier is doing, I believe, is following the medical advice he's getting. Now, they're all saying, well, you know, they're all mad lefties. They're encouraging us to sign up, and we're going to speak to a colleague of yours shortly about the COVID Safe app, but they're encouraging us to sign up for it. and do it, yet it doesn't work. It actually doesn't work on an iPhone. Why don't they talk about that rather than attacking premiers? And Daniel Andrews is the target at the moment, but it has been Ant Palaszczuk, it has been Glenys Berejiklian. You know, every premier's had these attacks. Why don't they get the app to work, Misha?
Yes. Well, first of all, on the app, I'll just say, I'll leave that to my colleague, because we're all about experts who actually know what they're talking about. And as much as I've, you know, followed it very closely, I think, you know, it's best to hear from the experts on that. I think that there's a broader thing going on here, which is there is a neoliberal school of thought, which is that we've got to get the economy back running at all costs. And really, there's been, you know, attempts to put pressure on Daniel Andrews, and there have been others sort of arguing, putting pressure federally, basically sort of saying, we've got to end these lockdowns, we've got to get the economy back, even if there is some cost. And some, you know, some economists, some people from that sort of school of thought have even been arguing that if you look at the lives saved by the lockdown, you've got to weigh it against the lives that would be lost from the economic consequences of the lockdown. So people who, you know, suffer depression or suicide or other consequences of job loss, that there are sort of hidden consequences of the lockdown that we're not weighing appropriately.
So is it better to die from the economic consequences or from the virus? Like, we actually don't want anyone. Well, we actually don't want anyone to die. And this is the sort of stuff that some in the US are peddling. You know, we've got to get back. Yeah, look, there'll be a few deaths, but that's all right. You know, it's not all right.
And look, I mean, that's absolutely right. I just wanted to go and say, I just think it's absolute nonsense, because all of the strong weight of evidence from every economist, we had a piece signed by, I think, 100 economists on The Conversation, all over the world, is basically, it isn't actually a question. The evidence is clear that if you want to maximise public well-being in terms of measuring of death or quality of life or anything else, what the government, say, in Australia has been doing has been absolutely right. There is no argument that if you weigh one thing against the other, that it's better to have the economy running and just deal with a few deaths or whatever. That argument just doesn't fly yet. You can see it being peddled by vested interests.
Yes.
You obviously make a lot of money out of the economy being very successful. You can see it sort of animating some of these attacks from Daniel Andrews, animating the attacks from the right of politics. I think it is a dishonest, cruel, self-serving argument. And I think we should pay it no heed.
Yeah.
I have heard a number of people say that a healthy population gives you a healthy economy. So there's no point in focusing on an economy drive if you're going to kill people along the way.
It
just doesn't work.
I think that's right.
There's only a certain amount of economic growth from funerals.
Sorry, Misha.
That's right. And I mean, you know, it was, I think it was Tim Wilson. I heard a grab on the radio this morning.
Oh, my God.
Somebody was saying, you know, that Daniel Andrews is drunk on the power of, of what he's doing. That's just absolute nonsense. I think he has been circumspect. He has been responsible. I think the decisions have all been made in the best interest of the population. Now, as much as anybody else, I would love to get out of lockdown. Don't get me wrong. I'm waiting for it to end.
We all do.
Are you a secret golfer?
I am actually a secret golfer. you've got my secret.
You can play with Tim Smith. Golf, I mean.
Well, look, can I say, when those comments started coming out, I put my head in my hands and I thought, golf is already seen as sort of a horrible, privileged, white, you know, disgusting sport. It's got a very bad reputation. Those guys, I just wish they'd shut up, because it couldn't have said anything worse for the reputation of golf and people that actually play golf. Because, again, it was such a sort of self-interested, selfish thing to say. But, yes, you know, I do want to get out of lockup and I do want to be able to go and do things, but we have to understand that the decisions that are being taken are clearly being taken in our best interest. And this faux argument that there is some sort of other side to it, where you weigh the economy more, is just doesn't deserve any credence. It shouldn't be taken seriously.
Misha, let's take that as your final comment, because we have run out of time. Unfortunately, we can just chat all afternoon. In fact, I'd really like to do this over a few glasses of wine one night.
I tell you what.
So would I.
We've got to have a very boozy dinner, Misha. I know Yes. We won't overdrink. We're just going to have a very nice couple of nice bottles of red between a few of us. It'll be lovely.
Misha Kitchell, thank you very much for your time again this morning. We look forward to our next chat.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.